What's up, everybody? Welcome to We Have Cool Friends, the cool show where we interview our cool friends about the cool things they're doing. I'm Greg, and this is my cool friend, Jennifer Hale.
Hey, Greg, what's up? Hi, everybody.
Jennifer, can you believe we have not done a podcast show together since May 20th, 2013?
What?
I'm sure there's been a panel or something I'm forgetting there, but that's when you came to Up at Noon and we hung out all day and did that. But since then, we haven't.
I know, right? I had such a good time. Well, I'm glad we're here.
I'm glad you could make the time.
Yeah. I had such a good time there.
That's the thing about it. You know, 2013, 7 years to 2020, and you've just done nothing. You know, you have not had any work. I don't know what happened to you. You just became irradiated. Nobody wants to work with.
Down. You know, I don't like to do anything. I like to just sit around and do nothing.
Just slow it down, right? Jennifer, if somebody doesn't know who you are and hasn't immediately recognized your voice, how do you introduce yourself to people? Who are you?
Hi, my name is Jennifer Hale, and I've been stuck like this since I was about 8. No,
I'm a voice actress. I'm an actress who primarily does voice work. I'm a singer. I'm a songwriter. I am best known for cartoons, video games. You wouldn't know me from commercials, but I've done a ton of them. Yeah.
Really? I didn't know that about you.
Yeah, you're in the commercials.
What commercials would I know you from? Yeah, I'm sure. That's the thing. Well, that's the joke. If you don't know Jennifer Hale, which you have to, I mean, you're recognized by the Guinness World Records, right? As like the most prolific female voice actress. Like, if you don't know her, go check out her IMDb and you know it. Because I think it is that constant surprise with you of course, I think of Jen Hale, I think of Femme Shep. I think of Commander Shepard, right? You were my voice throughout the entire Mass Effect trilogy. That's how it is. But then
real men play Femme Shep.
It's true. People with taste. You know what I mean? Gender aside.
I love you, Mark Meer.
No, it's too late. We can bury him. Don't worry. It's over. Don't worry. But you go and you look at your IMDb and you run down the list, right? And it is this, you're an onion. The deeper you get, to the fact that, you know, I always talk about Metal Gear Solid being such a formative game for me. And I don't think of you as Naomi Hunter. I knew that character so well before I ever met you to then go back. I'm like, all right, that's Jen.
And Emma Emmerich, which is really cool to have two characters in the same franchise. Yeah. I mean, right? I feel like my franchise associations are incredible. This year we've got the Marvel game and then the
two. You had two. You had Iron Man VR where you're Pepper Potts and all like, that's awesome. Then I start playing and getting obsessed with Marvel's Avengers and you're Maria Hill. I was like, man.
Yeah, I'm very lucky. And then the BioWare stuff and then the Star Wars stuff. And to have the tiny little moment that I had in, oh God, now I'm going to lose it. The last Star Wars movie.
You're one of the voices right at the end. They're talking to Rey.
Yeah, it was just keeping that a secret was tough.
I have to imagine the NDA you signed, though, kept you very much. You were aware of what to do here. Yeah.
But, you know, my whole life is an NDA because when we work, it's all under code names. You know, it's things like Pineapple, Nashville, Tuesday. Like, I don't know. Was I in that game? I don't know. I did something called Pineapple and I showed up and put on the mocap suit or I went in the booth So I pretty much forced myself to forget what I've done because I don't want to leak anything. And I remember when I did Ash for Overwatch, a girlfriend of mine was at BlizzCon on the Friday and I was secretly supposed to be coming on the Saturday for the big reveal. And she was texting me going, I'm hearing your voice. And I was like, how's BlizzCon?
Do you know? That's weird.
And I finally got my agents to email somebody to say, can I please confirm this? Because I'm getting so many questions. And they're like, go ahead. I'm like, okay, it's me. You know?
Yeah. That's the thing I can't fathom. For somebody as busy as you are and the NDAs you have, the amount of times in the video game industry, you know, I'm lucky enough that I think since Up at Noon, getting to work with you guys and having formed friendships and, you know, texting or hanging out or meeting you at an event and hanging out for a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, I know so many of your voices. And so when I hear a trailer and I immediately know it's you or I know it's Ashley or I, you know, the list goes on. Roger Craig Smith, right? It is that thing of the amount of times I'll turn to a PR person or email and make, that was awesome. To be clear, that was as Jennifer Hale, right? And you'll get a response back. I'm like, we're not talking about the cast yet. And it's like, but the voice is there. Like, we know that's Dave Fennoy. What are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly. I know. We just play the game. I will literally not say it until I see the devs tweet my name. Somebody on the team that's higher up has to tweet about it, and then I'll go, okay, what they said.
You know. Does that come from, is that a once bitten, twice shy thing? Have you fallen for it before, earlier in your career?
No, I think the only time I ever came close to violating anything like that, I was getting ready to do mocap for Halo, the first time I did Halo mocap stuff. And they were painting my face, and it was, I mean, just the evolution of dot painting over the years has been so crazy, or not dot painting over the years on the face for mocap. They were doing it, and it was so cool looking. I was like, oh, I want to take a picture. And they're like, no, that's proprietary. I was like, okay, I'm just not going to say anything about anything. I'll like tweet a picture of my knee without a dot on it, you know, in the suit, just the pink patch on my knee. There you go. That's all you get for today.
Yeah. That's all you need. That's how you keep it going. That's why people continue to work with you, I assume. Is a Jennifer Hale really good? Can keep a secret.
And I have so much respect. You know, I've said this before, but you know, we as the voice actors are the ink in the tip of the pen, right? Mm. Like, there's a huge, I mean, it's a giant pen. There's a huge mechanism behind that makes everything come together, and we're the stuff you see coming out the top.
Sure.
But it can't come out without the ink, but it can't happen without the pen. And the pen takes a lot of work to craft.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
So I have so much respect for what everybody does. I would be mortified to do anything to jeopardize it.
All right. I have so many questions based on that alone. But before then, I want to remind everybody, this is We Have Cool Friends, Kind of Funnies, cool interview show that posts weekly or regularly. Sometimes it's Tuesdays, sometimes it's Mondays. You get it when you get it, but it's always there. And we'd like you to be there for us too. Of course, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny, just like our Patreon producers did, Mohammed, a.k.a. Momo, and Al Tribesman, a.k.a. The Predator. You toss us a few bucks. You can be in the friend zone. Ask your questions for whoever's on that week. You can get the show ad-free. You can get exclusive shows like Greg Way only on patreon.com/kindoffunny. But if you have no bucks to toss our way, it's no big deal. youtube.com/kindoffunny or kindoffunny.com/WHCF. You go to kindoffunny.com/WHCF and you can subscribe on the podcast service of your choice. All the feeds are right there at your disposal. Today we're brought to you by Upstart and HelloFresh and ExpressVPN. But I'll tell you about that later. For now, back to Jennifer Hale. So the thing that always astounds me about you is that when you take on these characters and you give them life, you know what I mean? And granted, collaboration, you're doing with a whole bunch of different people and writers and depending on the project, right? Animators, programmers, whatever.
Right.
You then enter into our lives, the gamers, the people who are, you know, anybody who's consuming the work that you've made. How do you then keep it straight when you go to a convention and you go talk to people? Because it is that, you know, even today tweeting that you're going to be on the show, it's a different touchstone for everybody. Everybody posts something different. It's not universally FemShep. It's not universally Naomi, right? It's something different every time. How do you keep that straight in your head?
Yeah, it's Totally Spies. It's Cinderella. It's Powerpuff Girls. It's Bioshock Infinite. It's like a whole crazy Hex Girls. A lot of Hex Girls. Well, because we're getting toward Halloween. I don't. I just Dory it. I can say that. I'm the stunt Dory. You know, whenever Ellen's busy, I'm stunt Dory.
Yeah,
I just stay in the moment and I play off of the person. I look at the material in front of me, and mostly people just want to be seen and they want to be heard.
Yeah.
And that's what I do. It's not about me. It's about them. I'm like, what do you need? What do you want to hear? And then if I've forgotten what the character sounds like, I'm like, give me your impression. Like, oh, that's what it is. Yes, I got it now. Thank you.
Of course I remember that. Yeah.
Sometimes I will. I'll confess every now and then something lands on the table and I'm like, did I do that?
Yeah.
And I,
well, like, again, to your point.
Time, you know.
I got to sneeze and you look at your IMDb. I'm like, I was there for that. But I think that's what's, again, so crazy about it is that your performances are so good that they can resonate in this way that, yeah, to you it was a week on Pineapple. And you don't know what it is, but you're in that. How do you craft a character like that, that you spend a little bit of time with, but you know is going to be in somebody's life for so long?
Every single character has a thread of common humanity. And that's what I go for. And that's what strikes you when you're playing, is that common thread of humanity. You take that as your basis, as your foundation. And I connect to it on as deep. My job is to connect, no matter what, if it's a crazy over the top wild deal or what was the Tim Schafer thing where I played this
Broken son. Age.
Yes. Broken Age.
Yeah.
Where I'm the son, which is the mom. There's some deep stuff in there, even though it's got a fun feel to it. Like everything is about the soul.
Sure.
Everything is about the soul and the expression of the soul. And that's what everybody in the world, I think, wants. And so if I can do that through that filter that the writer created to create that being, then the next level, there's that soul level. And then there's the circumstance level. Who am I? What behaviors are allowed in this person's life? What behaviors are not? What tonalities are? What emotions are?
Sure.
And then what's the circumstance? Who am I talking to? What do I want? I just dive in as hard as I can to every moment, no matter who I'm playing, and give that character their 1000% due, so that you guys can have a full experience on the other side.
You know, we've had a good run here of, you know, really talented people like Jack Quaid, less talented people like Nolan North.
And oh, God.
They've been on, I know, right? And we've just been in this thing. You talk about these characters you're coming in and giving life to and finding that common piece of humanity, right? Mm-hmm. How do you tackle something like an Iron Man VR where you are Pepper Potts? And obviously there's this history for comics. There's the Gwyneth Paltrow movie version. Mm-hmm. Do you try to consume that, or do you just sit down with the script and try to find your own voice?
I can't be Gwyneth Paltrow. I can't be anybody but the soul that I was given, the vessel that I was given. I will take things from those previous presentations in terms of the world and the structure and behavioral, you know, expectations, like the way Pepper Potts dresses, the way that she walks, the way that she deals with Tony and their history. They're very specific and very clear, and they come from the world. I like to go back to original vibe as much as possible. And then that gets filtered through the heroes of these things, which are the directors to me, like Chris Zimmerman was our guide on that one. And she's responsible for so much of pop culture. And then working off of Josh and Chantal. I don't put a lot of thought on the other stuff because that's about me. It's about how I look and how I'm doing. And that is the last thing I need to be thinking about.
Yeah. That was something I thought was interesting in Nolan's episode when he talked about it, right? Of coming in, sitting down and... No, checking all that at the door and not thinking about how he should act, thinking about how he would act, like being in that moment and not thinking, oh, well, this was how this I've seen this interpretation before, or hearing somebody through the wall during an audition and they did something, like, get that out, go out there and be authentically himself and come out that way.
Yeah, because you only have, like, we all have, if you think of it in terms of music, we all are a note. We all are a pitch and a resonance. And if we try to be somebody else's, we're going to be sharp or flat. We're just going to be off. And when we come back to us, it just rings, you know?
Okay. Tell me about To Sleep in a Sea of Stars. This is a book out right now, and you did the audiobook version of it, correct?
I did. I've never, ever done an audiobook, but I met Christopher at Supernova in Australia a few years ago. And we chatted. He was great. And he mentioned he was working on a book and he might one day want me to narrate. And I was like, sure, that sounds like fun. And because people have great ideas all the time, but they're not always able to be followed through on. And then a few months ago, he got a hold of me through DM on Twitter and was like, would you consider this? And I was like, well, just know I've never done one, but I'm happy to give it a shot. I've listened to a few, but I would love to give it a shot. So I sent them in a sample. And we figured out how we were going to do it. And at the time, I was actually busy building this booth. I was away from my home booth, and I just ripped out a couple rooms of a basement and with my brother-in-law, because I couldn't get a contractor at the time, and just like ragged myself out doing demo, and got the studio built just in time to start it to almost make the completion date. And we did 70 hours of recording.
Yeah. God.
Well, my first audiobook ever, right?
I
mostly listen to nonfiction. I've listened to fiction a couple times, but mostly nonfiction because I'm just hungry for information. And so the first audiobook I ever did was almost 900 pages and 50 characters, 50 plus.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, what? My phone was my best friend because I had voice memos of every single character. And I had that key line, you know, that you go back to just to get it.
Yeah.
And the funny thing, like, from listening to audiobooks, and I kind of had this sense that if you go too hard with the characterization, you'll throw people out of the book, but you still need to have some distinction. Now, that being said, there were a couple characters that, sorry, there was no half measure on them. They were just like, there's this one character named Sparrow, and I was like, out of Sparrow's way, man, she's doing her thing. And this other character named Trig, who just literally took over the rhythm of my body. I was like, okay, we got to keep up with Trig now. I was like, okay. It was really, really fun to do. And we had a really cool sub experience within the whole thing, which leads to that there's a small little announcement that I will be sharing about this.
Oh, yes. Is there? Okay.
Yeah. During the whole thing, I started writing songs when I started singing in clubs when I was 15. And then acting took over and I didn't really have time to like write and sing and do all that. And I went back to it recently and I released a song back in July. It's in my Instagram, J. Hale Graham. It's in the link up there. And Christopher listened to it and he's like, hey, would you consider a song for this one part of the book? There's this like moment. And I was like, sure. And I got together with my writing partner, Todd. Todd and I sat down and he came up with this great frame and we hung this song inside of it. And then two songs happened. And one of them, it just has an energy of its own and it's amazing. And we all fell in love with it. And we are going to have a release party for that on the 17th. We're going to do a virtual release party for the song. I'll be tweeting and Instagramming like how and where it's going to happen. But I think that's one of my favorite things to come out of all this is just this incredible experience of creativity. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. And I think it was inspired by this universe that Christopher created in this book, this whole fractal universe and this whole, like the story is super engaging and it's.
Do you mind if I interject with the synopsis for people? Because I did my work here. All right. And I have the synopsis here. To sleep in a sea of stars. To sleep in a sea of stars is a story of enormous intergalactic weight and consequence, but also of deeply personal human strength, compassion, and awe. Mm-hmm. During a routine survey mission on an uncolonized planet, xenobiologist Kira finds an alien relic that thrusts her into the wonders and nightmares of first contact. Epic space battles for the fate of humanity take her to the farthest reaches of the galaxy and, in the process, transform not only her, but the entire course of history.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good synopsis. That kind of speaks to the Jennifer Hale a lot of people know, I think, of Commander Shepard out there saving the Citadel.
It was incredible. There were like four moments in the last 20% of the book that completely took me off guard. I was in tears. And I had to stop talking.
Oh my gosh.
Because I was choked. I was like, woo, this got me. And I had these sort of meta realizations, like the hawk's eye view of the world and life and what it all means in reading it. It was really profound for me. It was really profound. I loved it. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So like, and I'll tell you right now, I'm an ignorant person. And they were like, do you want to interview Jen? I'm like, of course. Yeah. And she's doing this thing. Great. Great tie-in. You know, it comes out, like I said, the September 15th when this drops. This will be timed perfectly with it. Fantastic. I thought you just read the book. I didn't realize you were doing characters. And what was it? 70 hours of work on this thing. That's incredible. Like,
yeah.
So talk to me about how you began tackling that. Do you read it and highlight and make your own notes? Is this something Chris is working with you on, the author?
I did the initial work on my own and I did this thing quite intentionally where I did not get any more than about 30 pages ahead of where we were going to be recording. Like if we were going to knock out 60 pages the next day, I would not read more than 90 pages ahead because I didn't want to have the energy of the next, of knowing something that I didn't know yet in this part of the book.
Sure.
You know, I didn't want to spoil it on any level. So I did that. And then Callum Plews was our director and he was incredible. He was the guide for tone and he would help tweak me here and there to get it right on what we wanted. And there was one section there. There are some alien life forms in it that communicate in a really specific way. I'm not going to give it away, but it's not any way that humans communicate. And so I did get Christopher on the phone for that going, all right, we got to suss out the vocal, because these people have to vocalize. They got to talk. So how are we going to do this? And we found a really specific vocal placement for them and this specific way of speaking for them. And then the main character, Kira, she converses with them. So I put her in that same space when she was talking to them. You know, I just wanted to create a world that people could take the ride on, but that wasn't dictating too much what people's ride was, you know?
That's got to be a hard line to walk, though, right?
It was daunting. It was super daunting. But I just, you know, I hope I did it justice. Please, God, be merciful in your judgments and enjoy the book most of all. Because that's what I wanted to do. I just wanted to do the book justice. Yeah.
So on the other side of this monumental undertaking, is that something you want to do more of? Like, this sounds like it really stretched you as a voiceover artist.
I loved it. I loved it. And I would love to do more. I would love it. Oh man, it was such a great experience. Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, anytime I'm in this room, I'm in heaven.
Yeah.
Whether I'm laying down tracks for a song or I'm just gaming or auditioning or talking to you, like this is my happy place in here. It's amazing. Yeah.
on a normal day, how many hours are you spending in there? I mean, I know that varies because of, well, you're auditioning, do you get the role, so on and so forth. But what does that net out like for you?
It varies. You know, yeah. I could be in here all day. I could be in here for 6, 7, 8 hours. Or I could be in here just for like an hour, hour and a half.
Yeah.
It depends. And it's got no rhythm. And what's funny is I've purposefully my entire career not monitored the rhythm. I don't chase my stats. I don't like see what my booking ratio is. I don't do any of that. I have this funny thing I do with my work. I separate my work from my money in my head and in my being. Like I sort of tell the universe, all right, this is the money target. This is really pretty important level. This is the, yeah, let's do this level. And this is be so fun level. And I always shoot for this would be so fun level. And then I just let it go. And then I show up each day and do the work that's in front of me.
Okay.
And I don't track it and count it because that moves it over into my left brain, into the like analytical part. And the force of creativity is in the right brain, I think, if I have that correctly, or somebody flip it.
Vice versa. You know, you get the idea.
The creative side of the brain. And I just want to stay there in free form and flow because that's where the fun is, right? That's where the joy is. And and I can't, there's so much about this career I don't have any control over. So why bother?
Yeah.
It just shuts you down. Yeah.
Well, you know, what I've always found fascinating about you and most voice actors, right? But you in particular, when you look at your body of work and career is that I think for me, a game player and, you know, somebody who doesn't create the stuff, right?
Yeah.
I would sit there and think that you eventually move to this echelon of voice actor where there are projects that aren't beneath you. I don't mean like you're in an ivory tower looking down on the serfs or something. But I mean like where you're to a point where, oh, that project, you know, obviously wouldn't scale the right way or blah, blah. And I'm always shocked by the amount of things I see you in that are smaller games, that are, they aren't the AAA, you know, they aren't Mass Effect. They aren't decade-long, 3 games, EA, BioWare. They're not that kind of thing. It can be something small like Republic, right? It can be you working with Camouflage and making something small.
Yeah, I love Camouflage. Hi, Ryan. I love those guys. There's another great indie project I'm working on called The Long Dark. Same deal.
Oh yeah, yeah.
My jam is grabbing the machete and cutting through the woods where people haven't been before. That's one of my favorite things to do. Breaking a glass ceiling, breaking new ground, working with people I love. For me, it's about the vibe. It's about the project. It's about that. And like I said, the money will handle itself. And frequently, when you're working on those smaller projects, you're working with the people. You're not dealing with a corporation. You're not dealing with, you know, and I have a whole beef with corporations and what they're doing to our world, what, you know, what they've done to our world that we're now seeing the consequences of all over the place.
Yeah.
And some are good, some. But I don't know. It's all about the people and the vibe to me.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Now, again, I love talking to you because it's just so many, you just give me so many great things to talk about. You talk about, you know, using the machete, cutting through the woods. Mm-hmm. Let's dial that back to 2020. Because you've talked about here having to assemble this booth. Where are you? Where has the pandemic put you? What is going on?
I came to visit some family up in BC. And they happened to have a rental house that the people had just happened to vacate end of February. And I'm a huge proponent. I'm going to go out on a limb here because I live on this limb and I don't, people will think about it what they think about it. And that's about them. It's not about me.
Yeah.
My gut instincts are everything to me. And they have been telling me for a while to come up here. And I was away in February. My father had a couple of mini strokes and we went back to Labrador where I was born. And I had this amazing moment where I stood on the tundra in the snow. I literally went out to just move a car. And it was quite cold because it was February up in Labrador. And I stepped outside and my father's ancestors are, you know, the white dudes who came over in a boat from the Isle of Wight in England. And the native women of Labrador who've been there for thousands of years. I stepped out this door and boom, like I could literally feel the ancestors. And I just had my car keys. I was just going to move my car. I was like, this is deep. And I just stood there freezing going, I wasn't even cold anymore. I was like, I can literally feel this land right now.
That's awesome.
A trip. So I got back from that trip and I was having this gut feeling, get out, get out, get out. And that was the end of February. And I was like, at some point I'm going to go up. It's fine. And then in March it was like, go now. And I was like, okay. And then I had a little thing with it, you know, that happened that I had, you know, some stuff that I had to take care of. And it was really loud. And it was like, get a ticket for Thursday. And I was like, okay. And I bought a ticket for Thursday the 16th just to come up and visit my sister. And just one thing led to another. And we sort of made it out right before they closed California and ended up tearing into this house and building the booth. And now I'm fixing up the rest of the house. I've got a little Instagram stories thing going through my reno. Yeah.
So you gut instincts and you listen to the voice and that's great. But when you get up there and realize what's happening, and granted, it all came in waves for all of us, I think, of understanding what this is going to be like. Is there any moment of panic for you of like, well, all the equipment is down in LA? I mean, I have jobs and stuff in LA or no?
I brought my mic with me. I brought any gear I could think of with me just in case, because I thought I was going for a couple of weeks and it turned out I wasn't. And then there's just ordering online. There's online ordering.
Yeah.
And I just dug in. And I had some great support from George the Tech and a guy named Mark De La Fuente, and just my engineer buddies just rallied around and my family rallied around and we just got it done. I don't allow myself to panic because it's useless. When I was down south, I was on a team and we would pull horses out of brush fire areas, right?
Sure.
So you're going into a fire. And you're surrounded by panic situations. It does no good to panic. You must be dead calm or you're dead. So just don't find any use in it. You know, worry and fear are silly. Yeah.
Were you always like this?
No.
You have this like sage-like wisdom. You know all this stuff. You have this connection to the ancestors and stuff. That's just incredible and amazing. And it's what I always think of when I think of you is what and like why I think you brought a broken age, right? You nail that character so well because you're in why I, you know, I'm going to not read this book. I'll listen to you read it to me. It's because your voice is that soothing. It's all going to be all right without saying it's all going to be all right. Like where does that come from for you?
Well, I grew up in a really difficult situation. I came out of a pretty nightmarish childhood. And you know, the Buddhists say you pick the family you're born into for what they can teach you. And I picked the high challenge family and I got to learn all kinds of stuff that normally a lower middle class white chick would not know. And their gifts, my level of compassion, my coping skills, my iron core, like, I don't know. I have a mentor, his name's Jim Fortin and he's fantastic. And he has this great saying, which is everything always has been, is, and always will be just fine. So if you dial up to that hawk's eye view, like, is this going to matter? And my sister's like, is this going to matter in 6 months or 2 years? No. Okay. And I have a real experience of what that does to your body when you worry. My body will not put up with BS. It will not put up with BS food, BS behavior, BS emotions. Like it just won't do it. It's like, I'm like, okay, sorry.
This was a mistake. I'll forget about it.
And I'm ultimately a really practical person. Like, why would I make myself sick with worry?
Mm-hmm.
Why would I worry, period, because energetically I'm, you know, what you focus on grows. So why am I calling that in? And when I do have those habits, I don't go, oh no, I had those thoughts. I used to. Now I've evolved to the point of like, just stop. It's that Bob Newhart thing. Do you remember Bob Newhart? He was around like in the 70s. He's hilarious.
I remember Bob Newhart. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. He has this great scene where he's a therapist and this woman comes in. She's like, I have this fear. And he's like, okay, I got two words for you. Are you ready? She's laid out all her her psychological issues. And okay. And she's like, should I write them down? He's like, it's just 2 words. Remember. And he goes, stop it. Which I'm like, you know what? It's easier said than done.
Of course.
It's what I do in those moments. I still have those spin moments. I had one last night and I was like, oh, wait, I'm doing that spin thing. Yeah, never mind. You know, there's nothing. We don't have control over jack except our responses to things. And even then, you just have to just pick a new track. Just go Dory, go, what? Was I worried? Anyway, what's that? You just squirrel it. Squirrel! You know, just change your drive. Because it's not going to fix anything. And you've got, 95% of your brain is subconscious right now. That's what science is saying. Like we had my writing partner and I had a business issue we had to sort out, and I didn't know what to do with it. I was really stopped by it. I was a bit thrown. And I just told him, I was like, you know what, Todd? I'm gonna turn it over to the 95%. I'm gonna sleep on it. I don't know. Don't have to answer today. Don't have to solve it today.
Yeah.
And within 48 hours, it was all handled. Like, didn't have to do anything, you know, which is different than avoiding responsibility. There's like,
sure, yeah,
go up for your stuff, but don't overthink it. I think I could have said all that in that sentence.
No, but the journey is what matters. Now we have our few words to remember everything by, right? Yeah, we got there at the end.
Yeah.
Do you, so, okay, as you live this life and now this 2020, do you plan on coming back to LA, you think? Or, and you were in LA, right? I'm not speaking out of turn. Okay.
No, I'll be back. I'm a two cities girl now because having my kid up here is the best. And I'm very much a two cities girl now, just as soon as things settle down. You know, I mean, this whole process, like, look, we're all super familiar with the hard parts of COVID. We're super familiar with the suffering of COVID and the difficulty of COVID. I think it's important to also, like, we're missing out on the benefit of it if we don't remind ourselves of the benefits of COVID, which is that we're not hanging out in malls in our spare time. We're not consuming and feeding those X number of richest families on the planet, who are ultimately the ones who own everything, with our dollars. We're staying home. We're going to parks. We're going to open places where our main focus is not how can I get ahead? You know, how do I look? You know, am I ahead of everybody else or am I good enough? Our main focus now is everybody okay?
Yeah.
And that's a really kind of beautiful spot to just stop and go, what really matters to me? I've been on this train. Like, we were all indoctrinated from the moment we were born. You're a branded generation. Like, you've got branded cereal. You've got branded stadiums. You've got branded streets. Like, oh my God, everything's about a company.
Yeah.
Everything's about feeding them. And like, do you know what your number one asset is that you possess that corporations want?
Attention. Nailed it.
It's your attention. Nailed it. Greg nailed it. Yeah, it's your attention. And like, let's take that back. Let's take it back. We have a chance to take it back. So let's do it.
Hell yeah. Okay. No, that's good. That's great. So now the other thing then about this room you've created here, and you're talking about this new track you're doing the release party for. Do you see yourself doing an album? Is that something you're kicking around too? Oh, yeah. Is that
I'm on my way. And I'm just kind of doing it one at a time. You know, I released Never, my first song, and then I'm going to release this one. And I've got actually four or five more in the hopper. They're not in the can yet, but they're on their way to being ready. And I'm just going to pop them out one at a time. I don't need to, I don't know. I don't have an agenda for my music except just to get it out and let people hear it because I love it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's what's, you know, funny about all this different stuff is that, you know, you go in this booth and you make all the stuff and you create, right? But it is similar to what you're talking about of creating for other projects and creating with other people and doing these things. Whereas like the music, I would assume, is a creative outlet that is yours. And granted, you have the writing partner, but it is still like there isn't a deadline and there isn't a crunch and there isn't this and we need to do pickups and you need to go here to get in the mocap. It's like when you want to, you get to go do that. And that's got to be pretty freeing.
It is freeing. It's also the good news and the bad news because, like, I'm a single mom, you know, and my kid is everything, and it's COVID times, and he just started school around here, which hopefully that'll stick, and you know, the ability to go to school, and there's demo, you know, redoing a house, there's all this stuff, and working really, and there's all the stuff that life requires. So there's a danger of being last on my own list.
Yep.
You know, so I put things in place that force me in here. Like, I've got these friends hanging on the wall with me to be like, hi, it's a lot. I'm getting a lot more time with them than when they were in their cases.
Now that you see these guitars every day, you're like, I got to do something.
Hi. Sorry, I'm not ignoring you. I'm ignoring me.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, it's pretty great. And I'm just loving it. I don't know. I'm loving this answering the internal call.
Yeah. How old is your kid?
He's 10.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, how much of a change was that to have him around, you know, nonstop when this COVID stuff's going on?
We're pretty close. We've been tight since the day he was born. I used to take him with me. Like, by the time he was 7, I think he'd done 60 some trips involving air travel.
Because I
took him everywhere with me.
And, yeah.
Then, you know, with school, it gets a little more difficult. But it's the education part, I feel the weight everybody feels around that one. Like, Lord, But for me, I don't know. I have a whole take on education. Like, the modern educational system was created mostly, I believe, in the Victorian era, is my understanding. And it was created when little Great Britain ran a global empire from that little island in the Atlantic without computers. How do you do that? You standardize. Yeah, you standardize reading, writing, and math.
Yeah.
Basically creating a human supercomputer where people are taught to execute your orders. And you don't teach them how it works because that might not go so well for you, which leaves people here and the people who created that system up here. So I have mixed feelings about education. I think it's very, very, very important. I'm just not always going to subscribe to the traditional frameworks of it. That sure. being said, I think the most important thing about school and all that for me, from my kid, is socialization, learning how to work in a group, learning how to do things you don't feel like doing, developing mental grit, developing emotional grit, developing social grit, you know, expanding. How do you learn? Like, a lot of us are really smart, like many, many, many people are very smart, but you're not smart everywhere. And when you're smart, I used to bump into this as a kid. I was so used to being smart over here that when I ran into something I was bad at, I was like,
I hate this. I'll never do it.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And my frustration tolerance was low. And that's like smart person's disease. It's like, oh, you don't have grit right there. So I go at it with him. Like, let's look for where you don't have grit. Let's build your grit, because grit will carry you through so many things.
Sure. And I think that's a great trait to learn, a great thing to learn, right? Yeah. Like, I think back all the time, and we were just talking about this recently on one of the shows, you know, Assassin's Creed Odyssey, this game I fell in love with and I really like. And now Ubisoft's got the Phoenix game coming out, Immortals Phoenix Rising, right? And it's another Greek gods thing going on.
Is
and
Elias in that one too? I think Elias is. I don't know. Yeah, anyway.
I don't. They did just announce that two of the people from Odyssey are in that, but not. It's not Cassandra and her brother, or whatever.
Okay.
I digress. But it's that thing of this conversation of like, man, this stuff's so cool, and it's so hard to believe that in school you could not pay me to read the book when we were doing this in high school to go read, and it was the same stories, right? Yes. But it was something about the way you had to read to. I wasn't learning to learn. I was learning to pass the test.
Yes.
And you look back at all the things that I went through and did well in or didn't do well in and stuff. And like, I can't tell you any of it nowadays. And like, even like, you know, learning the state capitals, like I didn't learn them. I learned devices to make sure that I could pass the test and get out all right.
Yes. I took corporate finance in college in a 3-week mini term. I remember nothing. I got it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I learned my lines. I spit them back out and I forgot the script, just like I always do.
Yes. you keep it for as long as you need to and you bounce. That's all you needed. Flushed.
Yeah. Yeah. At that point, I was already making a living acting. I was like, but I do love money and finance. I think it's really cool stuff. But yeah, you're so right. You're so right. The way that people, you know, teach us is not the way kids need to learn, especially boys. I mean, for a long time, girls were marginalized and we all know that. I think the current systems, though, are alienating boys as well.
How so? This isn't me being, I mean, I don't know. I'm not in this world.
They
like
want them to sit still for hours on end. That's not a boy thing for most boys, and certainly not mine. Certainly not me. I'm sitting here twisting cords while I'm talking to you. I'm like, I don't sit still.
I'm spinning. I'm spinning Mjolnir.
What do we do? Yeah. So, and they've got a single way of putting information into kids' heads, and it doesn't work for everybody.
Yeah.
It does not work for everybody. And we're at an age when we look at the levels of autism and ADHD and those sort of brain differentiations that are happening now, I believe those are a call forward to new ways of being and new ways of processing information, new ways of taking in the world and functioning. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense, right? Yeah. I think that, like you're saying, the world's changed, and it has education kept up with it? It doesn't seem like
no!
it. I mean, yeah.
Let's write dinosaurs, please. Yeah. No, that's offensive to dinosaurs, but yeah.
Well, if any of them write in, we'll have a different problem. We'll have a different problem to deal with.
I want to meet them if they do. I totally want to. Hi, dinosaurs. What's up?
But even like, I think of like, you know, something that was prophetic that was said to me by a 7th grade, 8th grade teacher, because, you know, we did it. You split the same teachers, whatever. Yeah. Was I remember having a conversation after school, and she was a cool teacher, and her being like, don't take this the wrong way, but like, you're going to love college. Like, you're going to be fine in high school, but you're going to love college. And I was like, what do you mean? She didn't put it into the terms I'm sure she wanted to, but it was that idea that high school is this grind for general XP, that what is this going to, like, whatever you want it to be. But that's not where you don't see how that A connects to Z. Whereas when I got to college and it was like, I'm here for a journalism degree. Awesome. Here are your next 4 years. And you have these choices here, but they all lead back to this. You understand why they do. And why I went to college and succeeded, and why I went to high school. And in high school, I stopped bringing a book bag home in sophomore year, where I was like, fuck it, end of the day, slam it, I'll get it done in homeroom in the morning.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was out singing in clubs and at band rehearsal and stuff. And I was already working as a voice actor partway through high school. It was just like, oh my God. But I was lucky though. I went to a fine arts high school. So I had some kind of a tie into what I was doing. You were journalism?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good time. Yeah.
I took,
you know what, and back to what we're talking about of learning to pass the test. I took in high school 2 years of French, and in college either two semesters or I think maybe 2 years of French there too. Don't remember anything. Marry a French Canadian, and she's horrified when I try to speak to her in French, and I conjugate the verbs in my head by singing the song I learned to pass the test. And she's like, oh my God, you know what I mean?
Although, to be fair, I took 5 years of French and I loved it. And the first time I went to Montreal, I was like, what is everyone speaking? I don't know what they're saying. It was so different because I learned Parisian French.
Of course, yeah. Yeah.
I was like, what is this? I don't know what these are.
It was literally, I came down to breakfast or whatever with her parents one time and the whole family's there. And I was like, ça va? I'm like, oh, ça va bien, et toi? And I was like, ah, oh, comme si, comme ça. And the entire place broke out in laughter. And I'm like, what? And they're like, nobody in Quebecois would say comme si, comme ça. That's like, you own 15 refineries in Paris or something. You're taking us to your fabric shop. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I don't. And then it cuts the other way too, where it's, and this is such a weird tangent for the Jennifer Hale, We Have Cool Friends. But like, I did a panel for Call of Duty Zombies, and the actress's name escapes me, but it was at Comic-Con, and she was Elektra on Daredevil, and she's French. And we were talking about cursing in the booth and how they wanted them. They were just like, oh, she was like, oh yeah. And I was like, oh, did you curse in French or whatever? And she's like, oh yeah, but nobody can understand. I'm like, oh, tabernac. And she's like, that is old French. I'm like, oh well, it's, you know, I'm married to a French Canadian. She goes, oh, so not real French. And the entire it was the room before Hall H, so it was like the giant one, but not the giant. And everyone went, oh. And I was like, all right, well, we're not gonna get into this right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I digress. I can talk to you about anything. Sorry. Jennifer Hale is just the conversation that is just going to be going and going. I want to get the friend zone questions in here, right?
Okay.
I want to see where we're going here. Okay, there's a Mass Effect question there, but I was going to come back to that before we get into everybody else's questions.
Yeah.
How often do you think of your experience with Mass Effect? Because again, it's not that it's like defines your career, but I think to so many people, it is you.
That's really sweet. I mean, it comes up regularly. It's a part of the fabric of my being, I think, because I spent several years on the project, right? At one point, I was dreaming in that universe.
That's terrifying.
Really cool, yeah.
I need Omnigel.
Right. And there was, like, it was cool to experience the evolution of voice acting and technology just through that trilogy, through the timeline in the production of that trilogy. Like, voice acting was in one kind of a style generally during one, and then by the time we got to three, it was even more cinematic and close to the vest, and that thought registers on camera thing became thought registers on the mic. Like, you could really just live it, which was extraordinary. And I feel incredibly lucky that I got to be a part of something like that. It was so meaningful to people and really meaningful to me. And I know it's not the limit of what I can do, so I don't mind it. I know I have a million things I'm capable of. In fact, there's something coming out, I think, next year that I can't talk about. And it's
you can tell us. Go ahead.
Nope. No, sorry, honey. It's a completely different aspect of my voice and my being. And it's just, it's fun. That's all I can say.
Okay. I think it's interesting because, again, you know, 2013, you're on Up at Noon. That's where we cover your whole life, how you got voice acting, how you started all that jazz. Go watch that on IGN. Give them a click. They desperately need it.
It was really fun.
Thank you. For now, 7 years later and all of this behind you, I think jumping off of what you saw change from Mass Effect to Mass Effect 3, what does it look like now doing these projects and these voices and these games?
Now, it's in a really cool space where I feel like everything's been dragged out of the warehouse and put out on the floor for everyone to play with. And we don't know what's going to end up back where, but it's a wide open field. I think the challenge is authenticity. The challenge is not to fall into the formula. And I don't think people are doing that. There's some incredible indie content. And even the stuff that's coming out in the traditional, you know, dev zone is really good. I think the field's wide open. It's kind of a beautiful playground right now.
I asked Nolan this, and I want your opinion on it too. Talking about Marvel's Avengers, you're Maria Hill in there, right? So you're popping up. We've already seen you now in the Kate Bishop trailer that Maria Hill plays even a larger role in that. And of course, I talk to you every day on the ship. I run up and I see you over there doing your thing. How does that compare to doing something like Mass Effect, which was a, you know, 10-year journey or whatever, but it was siloed and it was specific games and it was coming back to these projects? What is it like to work on now a games as a service that is, you've recorded all this stuff and I assume you have a contract with them that's like, hey, we're going to need you probably over the next X amount of years or something like that as we continue to update and do things like that. Is that something you think about on a project by project basis, or is it not even, is this just what the gig is?
It's just what the gig is, because honestly, we don't generally have those conversations. People can say, hey, we're going to do lots of these. And I go, great, knowing that that's their intention, but you don't know what the marketplace is going to do.
Sure, you don't know if
that's going to fly or not. And I invest the same in a giant franchise as I do in a one-off for a, you know, somebody working out of their basement, because that's what it is. Don't do it if you're not going to do it.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a different vibe. It's a different feel because the story's different, right? And it's part of a known, you know, it's like walking into a Star Wars or something like that. Like,
sure.
You're part of a universe and you know what that universe is and you know where you are in that universe. And it's a different vibe. Whereas at the time we started Mass Effect, BioWare had this sort of mavericky, cut new waters in big indie, but a little bit of an indie vibe, you know, a little bit.
I remember working at IGN when Mass Effect was coming. I mean, I'm that old, where when the game was coming up and being announced and Casey Hudson would come in through and talk about it. And it sounds crazy now, but it was like someone was talking in alien language to be like, oh, this is going to be a trilogy and your save is going to carry over and decisions you make in hour one of game one are going to matter when you get to game 3 years from now. And it was like, how is that possible? What are you doing? And to think about that ambition.
Yeah, because they're two different animals, because Avengers is like you're living in a revered, honored, clear, defined, known universe. Mm-hmm. And with Mass Effect, it's what you were just talking about. You're like, wait, what? What the what?
Yeah.
You're gonna, what? I mean, the challenge there was it was through the incredible writing and also through the amazing technology that just redefined so much. Yeah.
Okay.
And that puts certain weights on us as the actors. I remember, you know, some games you can vibe, you can improv, you can riff a little bit, but in Mass Effect, you could not deviate a letter from what was on that page.
Interesting.
And initially, Mark and I had to have the same timing of our, of
how. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Identical timing. So I would, in one, I would listen to his reads and then I would give them one that was like in that zone. And then I would do my read in that time. And then I would do my read that was like, if there were no limits on this, this is what comes out of me, you know?
That's awesome.
Then they got to pick. Yeah.
And you say in one, you did that. That wasn't the case for two. You didn't have to worry about that.
Two, I didn't have to follow up as much. No. I think they had their tech stuff dialed in to where that was the vibe. Yeah. That was working.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell you what, a lot of remasters. Where's that Mass Effect one? All right. Put in a good word.
I don't know. Over there.
I'm not asking you.
I know.
Oh, I mean, your work's done. They got you on tapes and mini discs. You're fine.
I don't know. I could go for some prequels or some more content. It'd be
now
really
we're
fun.
Talking about. Now we're talking. Yeah. Get the prequels going. That's what.
Yeah.
Speaking of talking, that was a bad segue, but it's a Greg way. Let's talk about the sponsors on this episode of We Have Cool Friends. Remember, you go to patreon.com/kindoffunny if you want to get the show ad free, but you didn't go there. So here are the ads. This episode of We Have Cool Friends is brought to you by Upstart. As most of us have found out the hard way, getting into debt is easy. Getting out is hard, especially if your credit score isn't great. Thankfully, now there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than just your credit score and offers you smarter interest rates to help you pay off high interest credit card debt. Ladies and gentlemen, guess what? When I went to college, I got a credit card and I never paid the debt off, and it just kept on going. And then I had another credit card and it kept on going. And it took a long time to do that. Upstart would have been a godsend to help me get out of that credit card I had that I was not prepared for. Everybody be careful with your credit card. But if you haven't been, Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter interest rate. The credit cards I had did not have a smart interest rate. Upstart believes you're more than just a credit score. They believe in you. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate. Since it's just a soft pull, it won't affect your credit score. The hard pull comes after you accept your rate. The best part, once the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. Over 400,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards or meet their financial goals. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is top-ranked in their category with a 4.9 out of 5 rating on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/morning to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate takes only a few minutes. That's upstart.com/morning. Our next sponsor, why it's HelloFresh. Get fresh, pre-measured ingredients and mouthwatering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door with HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. HelloFresh lets you skip those trips to the grocery store and makes home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. Of course, you know HelloFresh well. We've talked about it before. Gia and Tim use it. They go online, they pick the meals they want. HelloFresh ships it right to their door in pre-packaged little baggies. And then Gia gets to make all this food because you know Tim wouldn't do it. Even though it's easy, Tim just doesn't treat this girl right. Am I right, Kevin? Thank you, Kevin. It's fine, Kevin. HelloFresh offers convenient delivery right to your doorstep for easy home cooking with the family. The recipes are easy to follow, quick to make, and simple steps and pictures guide you along the way on the table in about 30 minutes or even less. You can save 40% using HelloFresh versus shopping at your local grocery store, and it's more convenient too. Of course, like I said, delivered right to your door. Why wouldn't you want to do that? Last I heard, Tim had some great burgers Gia made off of this with a nice ooey gooey cheese. That's right. I didn't say cheeseburger because I say burger. You picture the cheese. You know it's true. I know it's true. Go to HelloFresh.com/80morning. That's 80morning. And use the code 80morning to get a total of $80 off your first month, including free shipping on your first box. Additional restrictions apply. Please visit HelloFresh.com. They say HelloFresh.com for more details. Don't go there. Go to HelloFresh.com/80morning and use the code 80morning for a total of $80 off your first month. And our final sponsor of the day is ExpressVPN. There are tons of VPN providers out there. You've probably heard of a couple of them. And some of you may have even used a VPN before. But do the research, like Kinda Funny Kevin did, on the sponsors, because you know he's the one who's only one who works around here, and recommend the brand that is ExpressVPN, the best VPN on the market. Here's why: ExpressVPN doesn't log your data. Lots of really cheap or free VPNs make money by selling your data to ad companies. ExpressVPN developed a technology called Trusted Server that makes it impossible for their servers to log any of your info. Second is speed. We've tried a lot of VPNs in the past. Many slow your connection down or make your device sluggish. That's why we around here have been using ExpressVPN for quite some time. You've heard us talk about ExpressVPN, and the internet speeds have been blazingly fast. The last thing that really sets ExpressVPN apart from other VPNs is how easy to use it is. Unlike other VPNs, you don't have to input or program anything. You just fire up the app, click one button, and connect. It's so easy, even your grandparents could use it. And it's not just us saying this. Wired, The Verge, CNET, and many other tech companies rate ExpressVPN as the number one VPN in the world. So protect yourself with the VPN that Kinda Funny uses and trusts. Use the link expressvpn.com/morning today and get an extra 3 months of free. Okay, get an extra 3 months free on the 1 year package. That's expressvpn.com/morning. ExpressVPN.com/morning for an extra 3 months free on the 1 year package. Awesome. All right, Jennifer Hale, are you prepared to enter the friend zone? This is where the Kinda Funny best friends reach out to you and ask you questions.
I am ready for the friend zone.
Now, as you know, I get to clown around with you voice actor types quite a bit.
Yes.
And I've never once been like, hey, can you do a voice? Can you do a specific thing? But today, a young boy named Tamor Hussein, who works at GameSpot.com, found out you were coming on the show.
Yes.
And Tam flipped out and messaged Lucy James, my roommate, on Slack and said, oh shit, tell Greg I'll give him money if he can get her to say hello to me as Naomi Hunter. Is it possible to have Naomi Hunter from Metal Gear say hello to Tam?
Hello, Tam. I hope you're well. I just want to say, I was trying to do it for you. I had the best of intentions. I really did, Tam. Thank you.
Amazing. You know what I mean? Amazing! That's why they book you. Thank you, Jennifer. I'm sorry to put you on the spot like that. I hate doing that.
No worries.
But it's Tam, what I mean. Now owes me money. So it works out in the end.
That's worth it.
No. He actually sent me, he actually bought Portillo treats, so he doesn't owe me anything. It's fine. let's keep going with a little bit of Mass Effect here, right? Adam wrote in and said, and he wrote into patreon.com/kindoffunny, just like you can, to be part of the show, and says, as the voice of Shepard, what ending do you consider canon? Fan theories are acceptable too, but I think he mainly means that the Mass Effect 3, when we all make our choice. Oh, in your man. Head, did you say this is what I think she would do, or did you do, I'm just playing them all and they're all valid options?
I did. I'm playing them all and they're all valid options.
Understandable. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what I did. Endings are hard. And when you create an ending where you've got tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of co-creators with you.
Yep.
How are you going to get that right? Like, no.
How did you play FemShep as an actor when it is this thing of, on top of just making regular dialogue choices, there are the Paragon, there is the Renegade. I can, you know, so, my Shepard is very different than what yours would be, and so on and down the line. How do you keep all of that straight in your head when you're making a project like that?
I just tag on to a person's a person, Shepard's a Shepard, and I'm Shepard. Sometimes I'm Shepard in this mood, sometimes I'm Shepard in that mood, sometimes I'm Shepard, because we all have that, right? We wake up on the wrong side of the coffee cup. And we're like, rah! You know, renegade face. And then we're like, oh, I had great coffee today. I'm going to be Paragon. I'm good. I'm all good. I got this, you know. So, but it's the same human at the center of it. Like, it's that whole log in the back of my mind of like, this is who I am. This is the person I am. These are the emotions that are available to me and not available to me. Like with some of the ending stuff, especially this, the goodbye to Garrus, for example.
Ugh.
When I was recording that, I hit a moment where I couldn't speak. Like, I was completely choked. And I was like, Shepard does not cry. So I had to stop for a second. And I had to get it together. And I came back. And I shepherded it. And I got it done. You know, and then normally the director would chime in and she would say, Caroline would say, you know, okay, take A. And there was silence. And I thought, oh, man, did we lose the connection? Because it was a Skype connection.
Yeah.
And just dead silence. And I, Caroline? Hold on. And I was like, yes.
Crushed it.
And you read it ahead of time.
You know? Yeah, you I mean, knew it was coming.
Right? I don't know. You knew it was coming. And we did it. This was cool. So yeah, but it's really that through line of who that person is. And you just hang on to that no matter what, you know?
Yeah. Totally. Kayla writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunny and says, it was, and I'm going to butcher this name, I'm sorry. It was a pleasant surprise to see you credited for adding the voice of Ayla Sakura in Rise. Yes. Did I get this? Okay, good. Yep. In Rise of Skywalker.
Yes.
How was that experience of returning to that character about 10 years later since your appearance in the Clone Wars?
It was phenomenal. I loved it. She's a wonderful person. She is a resistance fighter, and I love to fight. It was really cool. It was really amazing to be part of that project and to get called in for that super secret job. And
totally. Yeah, how does that happen? So, like, I guess let's start even further back. So, when you do this character in Clone Wars, you know you're entering into the pantheon of Star Wars. You know that's a thing. You know there's going to be a Wikipedia about you and all this jazz.
Oh, my God.
Do you ever stop to think that it might, that the universe might transition this way to get you into the actual cinematic universe and bring you onto the silver screen, that kind of thing?
Nope. Because that leads down the road of expectation, and expectation is a setup for disappointment. So I just try to stay with what is, and then everything's a pleasant surprise.
That's an excellent way to put it. Sure. And so then, so what is that? Is that just a random call from your agent one day? He's like, Disney wants to. Oh my
God. It was like, we've got a job for you. You got to sign an NDA. We're not even allowed to know what it is, but we have a general idea. So we're going to, they do all the hard work, the negotiate-y, schedule-y stuff. And I'm like, okay, just tell me where to go when. And they're like, okay, we have more information now. And it's this. And I'm like, wait, it's what? I'm like this. I'm like, awesome. Okay. And I think one person at my agency was allowed to know.
Oh my God.
And maybe two. And I just, or probably accounting, that would be three. But yeah, so it was, yeah. And then I just, and then I, then there's the whole thing of movies go, look, I've done a lot of on-camera stuff too. And I'm like, yeah, we'll see what survives the
floor. See what actually gets through the cutting room floor. Yeah.
If you're not in an aha scene, years ago, I did an episode of In the Heat of the Night. And I think I was still in college. And it was awesome because it was the aha scene. It was the scene of the week where they discovered the dead body. And
sure,
I discovered the dead body. So I was like, I'm not getting cut. I discovered the dead body.
Trying to edit around me.
Yeah, good luck. Although they did shoot around me a lot. But yeah.
Jerks.
It's all right. Yeah.
And then my question would be for something like that, like what is a VO session like that for? Is it, how long is it for you to deliver? Yeah, you know what I mean? Like,
honestly, most of it was talking. It was just chit chat.
Yeah.
I got there to the place. I went upstairs to the room, and it was a big sound room with the big, it was like one of those post rooms where, cause some rooms that it's the glass booth. And in this one, they're in there with you. It's a looping type room.
Gotcha.
ADR room. And, like I got this, you know, and actually they didn't have it up on the screen. That's right. It was wild. It was done wild. So I had the script there, and there's the sort of second in command on the process. And I met him, and he was lovely and really great guy. And then the assistant, and I always like to say hi to them because people don't acknowledge them. I'm like, they're working hard too.
Sure.
And then JJ came in, and I met JJ, and we had a great conversation, and we, and so the previous guy found out that I was the voice of Cinderella, and he was super fascinated. So JJ was like, he's like, JJ, she's Cinderella. And he's like, do the voice. And I was like, okay. I said, but JJ, you have to close your eyes. I cannot do Cinderella unless you closed your eyes. So it's like, I can't. And so he closed his eyes, and I said, hello, JJ. Oh, it's lovely to see you. I hope you're having a wonderful day. You know, and he, see, I closed all your eyes.
I know, you did a great job. I get it.
Although I have a big thumbprint on my camera now, and it's crooked.
You got one question left, and then you're out of here. Don't worry about it. It was perfect timing. You nailed it.
It was fun. And we just had a great conversation. He's lovely. We chatted about, we sung the praises of Gray Delisle, who'd been in there before me. And I was like, oh, she's amazing. And I gave him a bunch of different options for all the different spots. Cause basically they had us that whole scene, all the different people talking. I believe what happened was we all did each of the lines, or gotcha. Many of us did all the lines, so they could figure out what they wanted where, and just kind of played around with it. And he was super happy. And then we went home. It was like less than half an hour, and it was awesome.
That's rad. That's so cool. I love the lineage of that. And I love the crossover of that. You know what I mean? Accepting that that's all one universe and that's how it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Your final question came from Mitch Krasny, but we kind of already covered it because Mitch was asking, hey, can you talk about the process of recording an audiobook? But I leave it here because he says, I know you just did To Sleep in a Sea of Stars. I'm halfway through reading a copy. So there you go. Already awesome. Somebody's out there supporting the book. And now, of course, September 15th, they can support your audiobook version.
Yes, that'll be amazing. Well, the process is really cool. I mean, I get the manuscript and it's under lockdown, and I feel a great responsibility with that. And we just go in and we just chunk it. We just go for, I mean, people who do audiobooks all the time, they'll do hours and hours. My sessions were like, you know, 4.5-5 hours of just reading with a couple quick breaks and then back in.
Yeah.
The biggest challenge initially was just getting the tech sorted out, because it was getting this room dialed in, making sure the internet was solid and all that.
So
and then figuring out how to run a backup. Did we source connect? Whatever Twisted Wave, and there was, what's the other one that starts with an A anyway? There's all this, the technology. I was like, okay, this is why I'm not an engineer. But we had an engineer in New York, Sal Barone, who would take over my computer once we started, and he would just run everything.
Nice.
Audacity. That's what we ended up using, was Audacity.
Yeah.
And then it was funny because we figured this out the first time, because we'd finished everything, we'd upload the files from my end to them, but it would eat all my bandwidth for like half an hour, 40 minutes, just uploading these giant files. So I was like, because I was in the middle of a sentence and like, oh, they're gone. Everything's gone because all my bandwidth is being eaten right now.
So right.
I was like, I'm going to say bye this time because I won't be able to hear you after that.
It's like you're going around the dark side of the moon. Like, you know what I mean? No radio transmissions from here on out while I do this. Yeah.
And then I'm running through my house going, nobody can find me. Free time. Unexpected free time. I'm getting on my bike. Bye.
Jennifer, thank you so much for spending this afternoon with us.
Greg, this was delightful. Absolutely.
You know you're welcome here anytime. Yeah. Like I said, To Sleep in a Sea of Stars, your audiobook is out September 15th. So right around the corner here.
Yes. And
I'm assuming everywhere, Amazon and whatnot.
Yep. Amazon everywhere. I'll be tweeting about it on at J-Hale Tweets and then on at J-Hale Graham for the other stuff. And yeah, I'll be throwing it out there. So just pay attention to that and I'll have it for you.
And when's the single party?
Single party is the 17th of September.
It's a big week.
It's a big week. It's coming up.
As I look at your body of work, I don't know if you have small weeks, but seems like you're always onto something, Jennifer.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
A joy. Thank you so much.
It's always a pleasure to have you. That's what we do here on We Have Cool Friends, where our cool friends come and talk about the cool things they're doing each and every week on youtube.com/kindoffunny. And of course, kindoffunny.com/WHCF. Next week should be a special one. If we're filming this out of order. So we're filming this on a Friday and then it posts on a Tuesday. And then Sunday, Blessings on a PAX panel with a whole bunch of video game industry peeps where they're trying to see who's the most famous person they can get to come be on their panel. So theoretically, that's going to be a We Have Cool Friends that'll go up next week. But if something goes horribly wrong on Sunday or PAX says we can't use it, it'll be something else. And you just need to follow on Twitter because We Have Cool Friends is an irregularly scheduled program. So who the hell knows what's going to happen? Jennifer, once again, thank you so much.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Kevin. Talk to you guys later. Thanks, everybody out there.
Until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.